I think one of the great tragedies of the whole COVID-19 epic, pandemic, that has controlled our lives in many ways of the last year, is being the human connection between a family member in a long-term care facility and the resident, right? That's gone for the most part. Thankfully, we have people like Seth Fisher, the Department of Human Services, Chris Jones on down there, working day and night to even push the envelope from some of the federal strings that prevent long-term care facilities for doing what they'd like to do and what they believe is safe, but, you know, when you control the purse strings, that's tough. So, Seth, thanks for joining us. I appreciate the time today very much.
Yeah, thanks, Scott. Appreciate the opportunity to be on the show.
What do you want people to know about this topic right now?
Yeah, you know, it's certainly been a evolving door kind of since the pandemic started, and certainly had its highs and lows, as you nicely gave a recap of there. You know, I think the important thing, really, the take-home message I'd like people to know today is, you know, a month and 2 months ago, we were in a far different place in relation to active cases within these congregate living settings where our state's most vulnerable population resides than we are today. So I'm really happy to share that as of today, this morning, we only have 106 active cases within skilled nursing homes, basic care facilities, and assisted living facilities across the state of North Dakota. So that entails a mix of both residents and staff, or healthcare workers, but that is down astronomically from kind of where we were at the peak of this thing about 6 to 8 weeks ago when we had over 1,000 active cases of long-term care. So as you said, this has been a long road for people. There's definitely been a psychosocial toll that has weighed heavily on residents and families, and they've had so many opportunities and so many things that have had to be kind of just foregone and missed. But between the vaccination that's now here, between a lot of the mitigation strategies that people are now doing a little more routinely in North Dakota, I think that light is coming at the end of the tunnel, and we're really hopeful we can keep moving forward and get things going back to normal here very soon.
If someone in a long-term care facility is saying, I'm sorry, you still can't visit your loved one, that is not a state mandate, a state regulation. That is a decision by those individual facilities now. Am I right?
Yeah. I'll get just a little more context on that. So, yeah, you're right, Scott, in relation to, so again, the three levels of care we have here in North Dakota, skilled nursing facilities, which there's 79 of, that's our highest level of care. Those entities are overseen by CMS, so the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Now, they have pretty stringent regulations in place that kind of dictate when these facilities can and cannot have indoor visitation, primarily whether they've had an active case in the past 14 days and based off what the county positivity rate is looking like. However,
hold that thought. Because I want to talk about, you know, the three levels and understand where it's at, but we're going to have to do that on the After the Show show. Back with Seth Fisher. This is the After the Show show. We started this on the air, so you can listen to the podcast there if you didn't hear the first few minutes of our conversation. But Seth was just about to tell us an answer to the question, if you are told by a long-term care facility in North Dakota that they are still not allowed to let you see your loved one, sometimes that is a decision that comes from elsewhere, above or whatever, but for the most part, North Dakota is no longer restricting that. That is a decision by some of these facilities. You were telling me there's three level of facilities. The first one is skilled in 79. They have strings from the feds. So if my loved one is in a skilled nursing home right now, is the feds still saying I can't see them face-to-face, Seth?
Yeah, again, Scott, it kind of just depends on those two key factors. So one thing they look at when determining if those facilities can have indoor visitation is whether or not you've had an active case of COVID in your facility in the past 14 days, and that could be either a resident or staff member. In addition, another driving factor is the county positivity rate for the past week. If your county is above 10% and your facility resides in that county, that alone is also an excluding factor because they feel like the community prevalence is too high, that allowing outside individuals in comes with a substantial amount of risk. But really, I would say that, again, as we've seen that nice trajectory go down in our state of active cases, thanks to people following the North Dakota Restart Guidelines and masking up and doing social distancing. Many of the counties are not in that 10% category anymore, and we have seen more and more skilled nursing facilities be able to open up for indoor visitation. In addition, the state and DHS and DOH have really even gone a step further and really been engaged in calls with key stakeholders at CMS, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid, just to voice our concern on this matter and to share with them some of the success that we've had in the two levels of care I'll talk about here in a minute, in assisted living and basic care, where we truly feel like we have been able to safely engage in indoor visitation in a safe designated space, kind of in lieu of those factors I just talked about. So we're continuing to work with them and try to help them to better understand North Dakota and some of our challenges here with our climate, because everyone knows outdoor visitation isn't fun, and we've really been blessed this year not to have a big snowstorm yet that's really totally put a stop to that.
I want to talk, before you get to the other two levels, I would just say you got to find a way, and a lot of us have found a way, and those outdoor visitations do help because you're seeing face-to-face, you're having a conversation, but it's not the same as giving somebody a hug. It's confusing sometimes for the residents. What the heck are we doing here? My mother-in-law is in a wonderful place called Kinder Care in West Fargo, and we designed a way with the help of the facility that they put her in a chair in their library, and other families are doing this now, and then we're outside leaning in the window. So we got our coats on, but we're having a conversation at least. They got a blanket on her. You can find a way, but obviously we know what's the preference. So I got it on the skilled nursing. Tell me about the other two levels and where that's at now.
Sure. Yeah. And so we certainly have heard from, you know, residents, families, tenants, a vast myriad of individuals regarding, you know, the other two settings we have in North Dakota, basic care, which is unique to North Dakota, and then assisted living, which is kind of your apartment type complex that has a tenant, type agreement with the facility in which they reside. Those two levels of care are, you know, much more independent in nature. And we've certainly been really working to try to find innovative ways to allow for them to not be treated the exact same as skilled nursing facilities, especially as we've seen, the hardships that the restrictions have posed on residents. And additionally, learned, as we have through all of COVID, ways that we can innovatively and safely allow for visitation to occur. So about 8 weeks ago, we did have revised guidance issued through the VP3 or the Governor's Vulnerable Population Protection Plan, which does allow for indoor visitation to ensue in any assisted living and basic care facility in North Dakota today, really regardless of many factors. So it's not looking at the county positivity rate. It's not looking at the outbreak status. Any facility should be able to have a form of indoor visitation. Now, if they have a large outbreak, obviously that might mean only visiting in a safe designated indoor space, so we're not having people going throughout the whole facility. Or if they haven't had cases in, you know, weeks and are not in an outbreak, then having that true indoor visitation in their loved one's room is a real possibility. But that is nothing at this point that the state is saying, no, you cannot do. And so I appreciate you note that early on, Scott, is that if a facility at this point is choosing not to go ahead and have indoor visitation in either an assisted living or basic care, that is their own decision, and that's not coming down from, you know, the heavy hand of government per se. So that's a great point to make sure is clarified. The other thing that you mentioned I just want to add is that we have done a lot of work, DHS specifically, with helping facilities get the grant dollars to install those HVAC purification systems. And so many skilled nursing, basic care, and assisted living took advantage of that grant. They could get up to $40,000. And they went ahead and installed those air purification systems within their entire facility in order to assist with mitigating the spread of not only COVID, but other illnesses that are common within these congregate living settings going forward. In addition, just this week and into the upcoming weeks, we also have secured a portable air purification unit for all 215 facilities across the state. So this is a unit that's, again, being given to them by the state that they can utilize, whether it's in that safe designated indoor space or another area within their building that they feel is high risk. But these units are portable. You plug them in. They help to purify the space in which they're located. And it's just another tool we have in the toolbox to really go ahead and help combat the COVID-19 fight within these settings where we are well aware our most vulnerable reside.
Great stuff. Margo in Garrison has a question before we let you go, Seth. Margo, go ahead with your question.
Yes, I'm just wondering if the nurses can wear the PPE gear, would it be possible for the family members to wear the PPE gear and allow them to be able to be near their loved ones? And then for, I don't personally have anybody in long-term care facility, but I know for me and my parents who are in their 70s, this changed how we would move forward with long-term plans. We would make this our last resort.
Sure. Yeah. And, you know, certainly PPE is a tool in that toolbox. Anytime these visits are occurring, the family members do have to go through a screening process, you know, a COVID questionnaire. They have to have their temperature assessed. And additionally, they have to don, you know, a surgical mask or appropriate PPE in order for a visit to even ensue. If you're asking, like, specifically in the nursing homes that CMS is saying, no, we can't have, you know, visitors, the county prevalence is too high, or, you know, they have too many active cases. At this time, unfortunately, no, they haven't given any, you know, leniency on that or any additional guidance saying, yep, with additional PPE, you can have visitation despite these disqualifying factors. But again, in assisted living and basic care, that should be a non-issue because every assisted living and basic care today from the state's perspective can have a form of indoor visitation after visitors have been screened and after they are donning the necessary PPE based off of, you know, who they're visiting and the associated risk. The other key that we have in our toolbox as of late, that I'm sure many have heard of, is that BioNX now, that rapid antigen testing. And many facilities are actually offering that free of charge to visitors when they come as an additional mitigation strategy. So, you know, you're coming in to visit. Hey, would you like to partake in a BioNX now test? It'll take 15 minutes. We'll know your results. And, you know, if you're positive, then it, again, just prevents someone from coming in that may be asymptomatically carrying the virus in and increasing that risk of transmission. So, and your second question, Margo, certainly, I think the facilities would agree that there has been a toll on the amount of admissions and interest they've seen from individuals wanting to move into these settings. So, again, I think the sooner we can kind of get back to a sense of normalcy, hopefully with the vaccination, incorporation of some of these new treatment options like the monoclonal antibody therapies for people before they truly get severely sick and require hospitalization, are hopefully going to help us be able to slowly back off on the restrictions we've seen and all those things that are kind of turning people off maybe from moving towards these type of environments right now. So I think everyone's ready to be back to the new normal.
Margo, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. I'll end with this. There's a news release from the Department of Health today out that says individuals with COVID-19 at high risk for serious complications have more treatment options and are encouraged to talk to their healthcare providers ASAP. As a part of what you just talked about, Seth, I'm a little baffled because some of this stuff isn't new. We've known about this almost from day one. The president even used some of these to recover rapidly. Why has it taken so long to, even if it's just your doctor and you in the conversation saying, I want them, I'll sign whatever, let me take them. Why are we talking about this a year in?
Well, you know, I think that is very fair. You're right. President Trump got Regeneron himself when he went to Walter Reed. And so I think really it's just been about public awareness, Scott. You know, I think our providers have done a great job about knowing about this. But unfortunately, when you call and reach out to someone and maybe they don't have the background on it, or people, I've seen a lot of confusion between vaccination and the monoclonal antibodies. You know, people don't understand the difference. And so I think it's really just about improving that public awareness, helping to make sure people are really educated and using, you know, simplistic terms that are easy to relate to. So when they do test positive and those providers are having those initial conversations, it's not the first time they're hearing about this. It's not, I want to sit back, I want to think about it for a few days. It's, oh, just as you said, this is what President Trump got, or, you know, this is a nice way just to give my immune system a little bit of pain. And so when that provider does that initial outreach, they really have the information kind of in front of them, have heard of it, and are ready to say, yep, sign me up. So the state really believes in this tool. We've really, again, been pushing for more utilization of it and just really trying to get it out there, because it's part of that three-pronged approach that Governor Burgum has talked about before to really help us, again, continue with the ongoing COVID fight.
Seth, really appreciate the information. I mean, probably one of the most informative conversations of this whole thing, and we did it in 10 minutes or less. So I appreciate that very much. I know it's a frustrating time. Sometimes you just sort of give in and stop, you know, fighting. But I think, you know, where you're in now, that's not a time to stop fighting. It's time to say, okay, why can't I give my mom a hug? And, you know, sometimes the answer isn't easy and sometimes it is. So keep asking. It is not the state of North Dakota in the case, in most cases here. It might be a federal government thing, but just ask the right questions. Question everything respectfully and hopefully get an answer you seek. So, Seth, thanks for the time.
Yeah, no, thanks, Scott. Appreciate it.
Seth Fisher, VP3 State Regional Coordinator at the North Dakota Department of Human Services, our After the Show guest on the Leftovers package today. Leftovers podcast. I love it.